And yes, welcome to it. This is Wellington Access Radio, the Black House, 106.1 FM. Why are you guys laughing?
I'm just waiting for Ron.
It feels weird being on this side, right?
Yeah, it does. If you've been doing other things.
So I have to drive the conversation now.
This is weird for me. Like, this is like the first time in like 4 years I've been over here.
Anyway, welcome to it, guys. And yeah, we are back. Another week.
Yeah. Another week. And there's grimy grimes. Like, you know, I've been having a bit of a whinge. Mm-hmm. I'm having a whinge about traffic. No, I'm really serious.
I told you, get a bike.
I live in Newtown because I'm close to the city. It shouldn't take 30 minutes to get there.
Well, I'm in the city.
And how long does it take you? Does it take you 30 minutes to get to the city?
I walk. It's good exercise for me.
And there's not enough people here to cause a bottleneck. Clearly.
Yeah, so Africa Weekend this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, exciting times.
You gonna plug the gig?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're gonna say yes. So make sure tonight we got El Barrio. We got the Aphrodisiac. I feel like that's the Aphrodisiac event. It's me, DJ Colios. I think hosted by Afrocentric. It could be a good night. So
yeah, Swagmantic.
$10 entry. Yeah.
$10.
$10.
Yeah,
let me check the poster.
Yes, $10. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got a new person in the room. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Kia ora, my name is Machu Somerville from Lower Hutt, out in Newlands now, beautiful Wellington. IGMATRU.TS.
How did we meet?
This is like every kind of Leah origin story. Of like, and then I met Leah at a party somewhere.
So we met and we had a little yarn, and I was like, "Where are you from?" Spot each other in the diaspora, I think. Do you have those moments as well?
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Like when I see someone that could be from Africa, you know, if I get the opportunity to talk to them, I'd love to talk to them, you know.
Yeah. So your background, you're Eritrean?
Yeah, I'm Eritrean, so Kanama.
And your other side, you're Māori?
Yeah.
So whereabouts? Like, which whānau do you belong to?
So down here, I'm from Tiatiawa, and then from Eritrea, I'm Kunama.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, shout out all your people there.
Yeah, exactly, 100%, yeah.
So, what do you do? Like, what are you doing here? Like, and are you at school? Are you studying, working? What's your pastimes?
My pastimes at the moment is I do a little bit of graphic design, and I work at Ridges Hotel in Wellington. So I do a little bit of auditing, night shifts, so it's pretty long, to be honest with you.
Did you hear what he said, Eddie?
What's this?
He does graphic
designing. I heard the auditing part, like, no. Graphic design.
I feel like in our community, auditing is probably quite a useful skill. Like.
Thank you for coming on. I tried to get you on earlier, but I've had to run around and do some stuff, and Eddie's been taking charge. But
thank you
for coming in, and we always want to bring more people in that want to just have space and hold space for us, so it will talk about whatever. So I'm really glad you're here. And
I think it's funny you were talking about, like, you know, we in the diaspora recognizing other people. I remember about a year or two ago, I was at a gig down in Arnhem Bay, sort of thing, yeah. And it was like one of those ones, and I was talking to her, and I spotted this girl there, and I was just like, I'm pretty sure you're African. So I went up and started talking to her, and I was like, do you mind asking where am I from? Where are you from? And she's like, I'm from Wellington. And I was like, I mean, like, in the sense that, like, when other ethnic people ask other ethnic people where we're from. And she's like, oh, I'm Turkish Nigerian. And I was like, yo, okay, cool. Okay.
It's really bizarre. I've had moments in supermarkets where mum has walked past, and she's clearly got a child of African heritage or Caribbean heritage, and the baby walks past, is looking at mum, and then they go like that. And they're looking at you. And I'm like, yeah, I'm looking at you too. Like, yeah, we see each other.
I've seen you see me.
It's 100%. Like that. It's like the Kiwi unofficial, like, hey. And it starts really young. That's what's really funny. But, yeah. there's just those moments all the time, you know?
I always get it, like, as a certain thing when, especially, I think, yeah, like, the same thing when it's, like, kids, like, I think Newtown Festival, the amount of kids, were, like, mixed kids I saw around, obviously I had my hair down, sort of thing, so I was like, oh, I said, we have the same hair. I was
like,
yeah.
I saw a couple of young kids walking up, and clearly mixed race, and I was, like, just having a brain fart about the traffic. And I just said, you know, let out a few. And then they were looking at me. And I'm like, no, it's not you. It's the traffic. You're all good. And they were like, hey. Yeah,
that's
incredible. So, you know, it's Africa Day tomorrow.
Yes, yes. Mm. Before we get to Africa Day, it's actually very, what can I say, poignant that the African Champions League, like the CAF Champions League, is being played a day before Africa Day, the final.
Okay.
The first leg of the final.
Who are the soccer? This is soccer, right?
Yes.
Who are the soccer fans in here?
As you can see. Clearly, so
he didn't tell us about it.
Mamelodi Sundowns, the biggest team. Well, not. Well, they say it's a small team because they have 57 fans. So I'm part of the 57.
Only 57?
It's a joke in South Africa. I mean, they always talk about us having 57 fans. So the most successful team in South Africa, having won the Betway Premiership eight times in a row, effective last week, is playing the final for, I think, the third time now. So we're looking to add another star on top of our crest here against the Pyramids, Pyramids Football Club from Egypt.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting clash because Pyramids actually did beat the biggest club in South Africa in terms of supporter base, which is Orlando Pirates. I think it was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was our last show that you and I did together.
Yeah.
I think you've been like up all night watching.
I'm always up at night watching football or Formula One. So, yeah, the Champions League final's happening, shouldn't be about 3 a.m.? Tomorrow for us.
Right.
Yeah, so
there'll be a lot of people heading off where at 3 a.m. Watch that.
They'll be going to Loftus-Versfield, that's in Pretoria.
Right.
So that's the first leg that's going to be happening. Then the second leg is going to be happening next week. That'll be on Sunday, 4 p.m. Cairo time at the Cairo International Stadium.
And where will the local people in Wellington be going to watch these finals, the ones that are the fans?
I think they'll probably be in bed. it's at such an awkward time, man. Like, yeah. I know I'll probably wake up like 20 minutes before the game.
Well, 3 a.m.
Garage.
You're still in the club.
No.
Tonight. 3 a.m. It's 3 a.m. in the morning tomorrow morning.
So I'm on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on 10 till 12.
10 till 12.
And then I'm going to be going to bed at about 1. Like, I'm not
in other words, I'm not watching the game. Yeah, so I'll be watching the game at about 3 a.m. And then we see how the team does. I'm sure we will. It's a tricky one.
Smoking.
We are confident. But
you got this way.
You have to be carefully confident as well at times because these teams have got this little card that they play at times.
Yeah.
Like everyone thought that Pirates was going to win the game against Pyramids.
Right.
The Pyramids just did it in the last minute and just said, you know what, Pirates, we're knocking you out now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking it's so funny, just thinking about Egyptian sports clubs. There's just such a wealth of names you could draw from. Like,
yeah.
Just like pharaohs.
Pyramids.
Sphinxes. Yeah.
Hidden cities under Giza.
I think there should be a team called Giza Football Club, right? I think it's there.
It
probably is there.
Yeah.
But it must be probably down at the bottom of the league. And also, this is a precursor to the Club World Cup that's going to be happening, where Mamelodi Sundowns is also going to be there, competing against the best in the world.
And Sundowns are? You're talking to somebody who doesn't know much about soccer.
No, Sundowns is the top team in South Africa. The one I'm recruiting some supporters.
I mean, I do go and watch soccer games, and I get into all the frivolity, and I kind of understand the thing, but I'm not attached to any soccer team. I'm not even attached to rugby teams.
Is it?
No, really? I'm not even an All Black fan.
Really?
No, I think soccer players are much better built.
That's hilarious.
And basketball players are even more better built. But, you know, it's like, I'm not really, I was never really, I did play soccer for a short period as a kid, and I was the goalie, and I spent most of my time, you know, trying to avoid getting hit in the head. So, you know.
Oh, I broke like numerous pairs of glasses playing soccer.
You broke glasses? Yeah.
I broke ankles, bro.
But, like, I don't mind watching him getting into the vibe. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I've been to a couple of soccer things up at the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed when Banyana came.
That was cool.
And you know, talking about Banyana, I'm actually just going to digress and go to the under 20s, the under 20 Machitas. They call them Machita, which means fellas, really. They conquered Africa this past week, so they won the, what's it called? The AFCON, under 20 AFCON.
So that's the national?
So that's the national team for the under 20s in South Africa.
Right.
So it's actually highlighting something that football in the in Southern Africa is actually on the rise. If you look at it, Banyana Banyana conquering Africa about, I think, 2 years ago.
Right.
Bafana Bafana, the men's national team, also getting to the semifinals. I mean, for a long time, we looked at Bafana Bafana and said, we don't watch the games, we'll see the result. Because, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't was it Trevor Noah used to have a bit about Bafana Bafana? Like?
Everyone did. Everyone did. So, yeah, lately, I mean, they've based their squad off the Mamelodi Sundowns team. That's the foundation of the national team, which is now making it, you know, it's improving it, really. Yeah. There's a lot of, there's a Brazilian contingent that's also joined the team, and, you know, lots of foreign-based players. But obviously there's a cap, I think, is it 5 or 8 at any given time registered for the season. So that has also helped up the standard because, you know, when you compete locally, it's just like, okay, cool, I know you. You know me. I'm better than you. I've always been better than you. But when you bring in someone else, it's like a catalyst for improvement when it comes to the footballing side of things.
Yeah, I think competition's always good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it ups your game.
I think it was interesting, like, I definitely think that kind of the shifting sport paradigms I've always find really interesting. Like, I don't know, my kind of quiet prediction in the next, like, I don't know, it's a long one, so in the next 10 years, like, the US is going to probably do relatively well in rugby, for example. Like, because when I was...
Really?
When
in
I
rugby?
Was, yeah.
Okay.
Because, like, the year when I was over there, like, first time I'd played rugby in years, but then like the following year is the first like college rugby draft that they'd had, sort of thing. Like it's kind of, and I think there's just like a couple of like, I think North Carolina does quite well. California, I think, has a really good rugby contingent, sort of thing. Like, I think it's one of those things that just doesn't quite, because it's not football or basketball, doesn't quite get the money that it needs.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people almost saying like, well, obviously if you haven't made American football, if you're to be good enough to play college football, sort of things, like, you've obviously got the physique, you've obviously got the skill, it's just kind of retweaking it a bit more to be able to play
rugby.
I would actually, well, look, if they've got that physicality to, you know, take down, say, the Springboks,
then
I can. If you play more matches against the Springboks and you'll get used to that physicality, I think then you're probably like on the right trajectory.
Yeah,
because the US in the past has always been known for their wingers, like, and they did import a winger at some point. What's that Zimbabwean dude's name? I think they had like two guys, like really, really fast guys. One guy was faster than Brian Habana. Yeah, and you know that is fast. so I think that's the kind of play that they relied on it at some point. But yeah, if they get the physical aspect right, they're onto something. Because if you look at it, the world champions, South Africa, really are physical, even more physical than the All Blacks at some point.
Right?
Yeah.
They won lately. I don't follow rugby, so.
Well, if
somebody's going to complain about that, I'm sure on our YouTube, like,
what kind of New Zealander?
I'm an Afro New Zealander. Used to it. We don't commit to those things. Anyway, what will be happening in South Africa? What will be happening in South Africa on Africa Day?
I know, for instance, Africa Day hasn't been really big in South Africa, like over the years, but for the past couple of years, I think probably 5 to 10 years, we've started to see like an upsurge in, you know, people understanding what Africa Day is about, celebrating it.
Yeah.
I mean, for other countries, it's actually a holiday. It's a public holiday.
Whereabouts?
Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is a public holiday.
I think it's Namibia as well. A lot of countries actually have it as a holiday. Mm-hmm. But in South Africa, it's just, oh, Africa Day, cool. Because I remember the time when I was at the University of Pretoria, we used to just have like all these little events, you know, bring your African dish, bring your African, you know, regalia and all that. And it's just like one little event at the aula or at the museum. And then they perform and it's done within like 2-3 hours. But now even stations are taking it on to say, look, we're going to do simulcasts with other stations. Now, that will drive me to what Swan FM is doing tomorrow, a simulcast with Capi Talk in Harare.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's getting that little bit of recognition as, you know, time goes by.
I remember when I was in Tanzania, we celebrated Tanzania Day. I was made aware of that.
Yeah.
But there wasn't anything really big going on for Africa Day.
Yeah.
But when I think about it, Tanzania got independence in 61, and Africa Day was established in 1963.
Yeah.
So we were, like, Tanzania was in the, those people that got their independence in 61, that was how they ended up coming out to New Zealand. They were like the, you know, the first groups of people. There was students from a lot of places that were in the Commonwealth, but Tanzania was independent. And then the Africa Day was, the Africa thing was signed on May 25th during a summit of 32 African nations. So it wasn't all Africa.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, because South Africa wouldn't have joined the African Union for quite a while.
For quite a while, yeah. Mm. That's why even at some point, people just like, Africa Day, okay, cool. Like, I mean, that was the general attitude around South Africans to say, there's Africa, then there's us. But I think more than ever now is the time when we have to actually have to look at it and say, we are Africa. We need to celebrate the Africanness, even not only on this day.
Yeah.
This is the time when we should actually be uniting. This is one of the days that can be used as a catalyst to say,
exactly,
we need to unite as Africans and think of a way forward.
Moving forward. And I think out in the diaspora, I mean, like, I've always been aware of it because my father was out here in 1961 with other SCAP, Special Commonwealth African Assistance Plan scholars. So I've always been aware there was an Africa Day. It's just new when I came down to Wellington and actually was living in an African community that I was like, okay, people are celebrating it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were, as a person living in the diaspora, I had an interest in understanding stuff about Tanzania, about Africa in general, about political struggles. But I guess sometimes, like, when I was there, it wasn't something that we actually did anything about that day. I don't remember us doing anything that day.
I think it's one of the
specific.
And I think it's kind of, but it's that weird thing when you think about things like traditions around that sort of thing, right? Like, I think part of it is it's like, it's special and significant if we make it so. Like, because, like, for my sort of thing, like, it doesn't really hold a lot of meaning for me, but it's the sort of thing of that. But I still enjoy doing stuff, or I want to get involved and do stuff with it, because it's like, because it's an opportunity, especially in New Zealand, to define, you know,
who we are, sort of thing.
And I think it's something special because we kind of make it so. And I think that's, like, the point Craig was making, in the sense of, like, you know, going from kind of, you know, quite small, kind of localized sort of things to be like, I actually know, like, we should be doing something bigger with this. Yeah. We should be kind of thinking about bigger.
I remember when I was, like, a kid, like, especially in Wellington, going to Africa Day, it was so cool to see people also embracing our community, you know, and, you know, because it was everyone, you know, especially being on that foreshore where everyone was just walking past.
Shed six.
People were, Shed Six, that's exactly where it was, and people were curious, you know, you saw all different types of people, and especially for us at Eritreans as well, I knew that our community was quite prominent out there, and so it was good to just to see everyone as well, you know.
Yeah. Because I think, like, for me, it kind of brings that feeling of being an older generation, and in a time when there wasn't that many Africans out here, it gives that feeling of, like, oh, we're seen now.
Yeah.
When you've spent, like, most of your life and you're invisible, but we're actually seen now.
Exactly, yeah.
It's always interesting, like, who kind of comes out of the wood, like, who comes out of the woodwork, sort of things. It is, like, you know, who people, and, like, I feel like I got COVID at from Africa Day a couple of years ago. but it's because I was just shaking hands with people. I was I was just talking to people the entire, like, it was literally just like, it made sense. It was like, okay, obviously, I think a lot of people got COVID from that Africa Day. But I think it's that sort of thing. But, like, again, like, I can't. I hate the fact that it was, like, a really nice way of, like, meeting people and just getting and talking to people and, like, definitely, like, connecting with people that I had kind of, you know, seen in passing or that kind of thing, or run across in the street, but, like, on the way to work or just in my commute, and then be able to go, oh, cool, like,
yeah,
just that ability to kind of hatch.
Because I know the bigger the community's got, there's been a loss of sort of connectedness. Like when it was a small community, we all knew one another.
Yeah, yes.
You know, even smaller here in Wellington. Like there's an old saying, like we had the BBC here. You know what that is?
Yeah.
We had the BBC.
You should ask about it off air.
You can ask off air. But, you know, it meant that everybody's so connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we get bigger, it's good to have these sort of days to remember, to go, oh, okay, like this is what the community keeps on growing and changing. And, you know, there's more and more. Like when I left, there wasn't a lot of people from... I would say there's some countries here, there wasn't a lot of them here when I left and went to Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like it's changed like the whole dynamic of the African population as well. Yeah.
It's almost the sort of thing, and I think it's a good way in the sense of like, obviously there are kind of like quite a big community, so it's going to make sense. You could probably do quite easily do a Zimbabwean independence thing. You could quite easily do these sorts of different events, but I also think it's that kind of thing of, it's also really useful to then... Like I said, pull everyone together. It's the sort of thing of obviously you get someone who's from, you know, the Gambia or something, and that's the kind of thing where you get people like, there's the Afro-Colombian sort of thing who, you know, have found that they've like found a community space and found a space within that sort of thing to kind of pull that together as well.
And that's something that I was really interested in, just doing a quick little, because, you know, we had to crash course this one because we had plans and things changed. But, you know, this is, Africa Day is also about the diaspora.
Yeah.
And I mean the Caribbean, Afro-Colombian, Afro-Brazilian, people in African, Australians, African-Americans, everybody is part of that African diaspora, but they've just moved at different times.
Yeah.
I think New Zealand is one of the youngest ones. I would say that most Afro-Kiwis here would have one or both parents that are African. So, you know, like it's not as maybe as distant as the Caribbean one or as distant as Brazil, but it's all part of that diaspora. And then, of course, over time, people change how they think about things. Like a lot of Caribbeans may not think about being African, but you're still part of that diaspora.
Yeah.
And we got to realize that the diaspora from Africa has been going on for over a millennia.
And talking about that, when it comes to Africa Day, I always, I mean, I'm guilty. Mm-hmm. I should be doing this all year round. But every time, just before Africa Day, I find myself looking for new music.
Mm. Right.
New artist when it comes to, you know, like the alternative space, your neo-soul space, your R&B.
Mm.
And I just discovered one, like, yesterday.
Who? You want to play it?
Her name is Sewa. I think it's pronounced Shewa. She's actually out in Toronto now.
Okay.
She moved from Nigeria, I think it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she is hot, hot, hot.
Are you going to play it for us?
I think we're going to play it. So this is a track by Shewa, and it's called Lagos Lovin'. Okay, if we can get that on.
Let me help you.
Studio PC, yeah.
Let me help you. Studio.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Let's start. Let's
reload that. Reload that.
Maybe you hear me on your telly or your radio. Maybe you think about those nights we had to let go. Wish I know how to get done now. It's all for show, baby. Let it go. Let it go. He said to me, put me, oh, baby, show up. Put me, oh, baby, show up. I'm so done with all the shit you put me through. Put my trust in you, got me stuck on you. I don't know what you mean when you go past two. Why tell me, oh, baby, so what?
Mufaro with Miracle.
I like
She's an absolute gem.
Yeah,
no. I actually was introduced to her yesterday.
Just yesterday?
Just yesterday, by my best friend. Like, I think it was about 10 p.m., if not 11, somewhere there.
And she's based...
She's in the Netherlands.
Netherlands.
She studied at Berkeley.
Yo.
So, yeah. Bringing that Afro soul...
Look, there's some really cool things coming out of the diaspora in Netherlands.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever seen those girls that dance, the sisters?
No, what's this?
There's some... I'll send you the link, but they actually do some really amazing... They're clearly, you know, African heritage, and they just do some amazing dance stuff. They've got a lot of followers, and they're like, I think they're probably like teenagers, but now their younger sister comes in, and they always do this dance. You can't see the younger sister, and then they go to the outside, and the next minute the little one comes in and is doing the same dance. Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
But there's cool things coming out of the Netherlands.
Very, very cool things. And then the song we played before was Lagos Loving Sewe. Oh, Sewe, she's just amazing. I think
she said she was Toronto-based.
Yeah, she's Toronto-based. I think I could just, you know, put her in a jar and just have her sing every night. Because she's got, like, you know, remnants of Asha, the one who sang Jayla.
Mm.
Yeah, she has that kind of style, but she also feeds into like her own avenue when it comes to her style. Oh, it's so amazing.
This R&B thing is really coming back, I've noticed.
It is. Definitely, you know, is.
I didn't hear R&B for such a long time, like those kind of beats.
Well, I thought R&B kind of changed. Like, R&B was like, went from, like, I remember talking to one of my mates about, like, R&B got like, I don't know, it was almost like, what are they called, like sad boy R&B for the last couple, like, sad boy R&B for the last kind of, I don't know, like, 5, 10 years to this sort of thing, and it feels like kind of maybe just that shift has kind of started to kind of, the pendulum started to swing back towards that kind of, not like exactly like the 90s or early 2000s, but that kind of swing, I mean, back more.
90s, 2000s, we were catching rain, and, you know, when you catch the wind and you have the rains falling on the wind.
Oh,
the
yeah, all those videos.
Yeah.
And the chest, you got to rip your shirt over.
Yeah. So, but now we've moved on, and people say that, nah, R&B died when that died. People should start catching the air again. Like, no, guys, yeah, we need to look at the new era of R&B. There's a popular thing, sorry to interrupt you, there's a popular thing in South Africa which is called the Sunday Soul Sessions. So you have, you know, people wearing all white, playing all those
tracks. Is that the steppers?
No, not
when they come in and do those step dances like they do in Chicago?
Nah, that's probably like later into the night.
Right, okay.
But, you know, earlier on, they'll be playing the Luther Vandrosses and all those other songs from the 70s, 80s. And I always said, guys, I think we're past that era. We need to actually look at the new artists. For instance, these guys
that are doing the news. Yeah,
because this is not getting too much traction because everyone's so caught up in the past. I'm like, how are we creating our own footprint in terms of R&B?
We were the coolest era. Like,
I think that's always that's always more interesting because it always comes down like hip hop. You get the same sort of things with that kind of 90s, that 90s like the golden age of hip hop.
Yeah,
and it's that sort of thing. I've been like, my take is always like, how would someone describe it? Like, the golden age of hip hop was good because of the volume that came out and because the industry hadn't exactly figured out what product it wanted.
Yeah.
So you could have Tribe Called Quest, you could have Biggie, you could have Tupac, you could have the Wu-Tang Clan, you could have all these groups who had very different vibes and very different sounds. Because the record labels were so afraid of missing out on anything that they just kind of, they would sign anybody.
Anybody, yeah. Okay.
And the idea being is that, like, and if you filtered through, there was the amount of trash that would have been coming, like real kind of average, like, you know, with not even trash artists, but like even just average kind of, you know, people who were like solid, had a couple of the songs that kind of sounded nice.
Cool
and this thing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I don't think LL Cool J was a good rapper, guys. Like, honestly speaking, I may be crucified for that.
Ladies love Cool J.
There we go. There we go.
I mean, what?
There's one of his cheesy songs. I don't remember what that song.
He's had a lot of cheesy songs, but
yeah,
he's like, gorgeous. It doesn't matter. He's still good looking.
But yeah, well, even you go like Slick Rick and stuff like that. Like, Slick Rick stuff is dated as hell, but it's like, it's cool.
It's still catchy still.
But I think it's interesting because I always like sit there and go, people like, whenever people say people go like, oh, Kendrick can't be better than Tupac because he's inspired by Tupac. I'm just like, just because you're inspired by someone doesn't mean you can't surpass them.
Exactly.
Sort of thing, right?
Exactly. So yeah, that's what I've been. That's been my passion, my goal to try and get people to listen to the new age stuff, because then I think if the more we listen to it, the more we play it, the more we have it out there in like our gigs, our sessions, the more popular these artists become, and you know, we will then have a certain direction in how we listen to music and not be caught in the past. Just like how people say that house music was so great, like especially in South Africa, they say between the year 2000 and 2010, that's when there was great house music. But I'm just like, you have all these new producers who are coming up.
Give them a chance.
Exactly.
Give them a chance. Make space. That's right. You know, like, it's not that hard to hold space for other people. You know, it requires taking the ego out the room, and that's always hard. DJs, producers, musicians, they're all the same.
Entertainers, basically.
Yeah. But it's not that hard to make space. And, you know, even with that, what you're saying about the rap and the hip-hop and the R&B, like, there was a period where things got quite, like, and also music was a way in the diaspora, how we learn about stuff that was actually going on in Africa.
Yeah.
There were a lot more, there was a period where it was really political. I love, like, you know, excuse Flavor Flav, but I did love Public Enemy.
Well, I did.
KRS-One, yeah?
I think Dead Prez is a real good one. Like, because Dead Prez were like, they were like hardcore, but they were like, they like knew their shit as well. It wasn't like, I think like, obviously, what's it called? Public Enemy, like, you know, conscious effort, but like Dead Prez was like, here's how we actually go through, here's how we do the revolution. Like, here's how we build towards the revolution. But I think...
And our sources were very Americanized out here. But now we've got our own artists, our own DJs, our own people that can actually tell stories.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not that hard to make space, I don't think. What do you think?
I think, look, it's not hard to make space. And at the same time, we, the consumers, are a problem. The whole TikTok challenge thing, this phenomenon that goes on with songs. You release a song, it has a TikTok challenge. I mean, that's good. You can have 30 million views and, you know, great. You have a concert, people buy tickets. But just to watch what? That part that plays on TikTok. Once it plays, people are out. People are gone.
Yeah.
So
I think the song.
Yeah.
Are they sticking around? Like, you're talking about longevity.
Exactly.
And I think this is the sort of thing of like, you can see this, like, I remember that the SoundCloud rap era was kind of the precursor to that as well, right? Where it was like, 100%. You got these kind of young artists that would kind of like put stuff out, would have like one or two stuff that would blow up, go viral, and then get signed. And essentially, someone's like, you could just tell that, like, within 5 years, they were going to get dropped by the label. Like, it was just like, let's just milk as many of these kind of couple of tracks out of it.
Yeah.
Out of them as possible. And I think the TikTok thing I found really interesting, because I also found it didn't kind of translate into growth beyond that one viral song.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, I was working in a hall of residence in 2020, and it was that sort of thing where there was a couple of, like, Afro Swing or Afro Bashment songs from the UK that blew up on TikTok. And then I started trying to incorporate more Afro Bashment into my sets, and it kind of, like, I could play those two or three songs that had gone on TikTok, but it hadn't translated into people digging into Afro Bashment as a genre beyond that sort of thing.
I mean, it's, like, it's really funny because, you know, growing up here... Music was very divided along... I don't know if it still is in high school. How old are you now?
I'm 20.
So I don't know if what it is in this generation, but when I was growing up, you know, in the 70s in school, house, punk, rock, very white music.
Yeah.
Hip-hop came out. That was the end of that. But we had disco, and we had certain disco songs that were very poly and Maori music, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was like you were like you knew where you were going.
Exactly.
And so, like, I think, like, when it's really funny to me is, like, house is a big thing and tech is a big thing in South Africa.
Yeah, it is.
But we don't know about that side of that. Like, we hear about all the cultural stuff, but there's also, you know, Africa's an urban place. It has massive cities, you know, and an urban population with urban music.
I mean, if you look at house in South Africa, it still is a niche. There's a term that I think I'd actually credit this term to Vinnie De Vinci and DJ Christos, who are like the godfathers of house. They used to present a show called The Urban Beat on Metro FM, and they used to call it hashtag expensive music.
Right.
So
expensive. What? Wait.
Expensive music. So every time when people got to me and I was listening to house, they're like, "Oh, you're listening to expensive music," because it's associated with a certain type of person, middle class guy.
Okay.
You
know,
you just started working. Yeah. You drive a GTI, Golf GTI. You're
so you hanging out with working class people like me, and you really the middle class.
It's interesting. A similar thing happened in the UK with garage music. Yeah. Where, like, garage music, like, was kind of like the kind of, like, when grime sort of kind of the rise of grime kind of garage was very glitz. Grime was very, like, full, like, proper dress up, like, you know, collared shirts and clubs sort of thing. Like, there was a lot of glitz and glamour. And then grime was, like, obviously our group of kids. Even if a lot of the artists were still on pirate radio and still from that sort of thing, like, the glamour and glitz of garage music. And then grime was almost the counter to that, in the sense that grime was literally just a whole group of kids, like, in a basement on a pirate radio station. And it was interesting then, because I was read an article that was talking about grime obviously got really heavily scrutinized as being, like, because it was like street music, it was like violent sort of thing. Yeah. It was like significantly higher, like, gang activity in the garage music scene than there was in the grime scene, in the sense of, like, shooting, stabbings and at events and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like that kind of veneer, it was like a veneer of how kind of nice and classy it was. Mm. But then obviously grime was, like, sounded a lot rougher.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
actually a lot kind of a more collaborative or more competitive, much more kind of safer space.
I mean, when you speak of that, it reminds me of the time when amapiano started being a thing, like, in the country, when the logjam was really hard. If you've listened to amapiano from, like, 2018, the logjam was hard, and it's become sort of softer and, you know, more chilled, because there was a certain association with that hard log drum. Every song that you heard from amapiano was always just, like, just derogatory.
Yeah.
Talking. You couldn't play it in front of your parents. Mm. But as we've moved on, we've had artists who've come up, like Gaba Canal, Coco S.A., Kelvin Momo, Styx, Jazzik, and all these other guys. Softened up, and everyone can listen to it. It's palatable now. Mm. You couldn't play amapiano on radio.
Right.
It could never be played on radio.
Oh, I remember when you couldn't play a lot of black music here.
Yeah.
Like, but it's interesting what you're saying about you know, historic, because when I went to Tanzania, historic music, and just becoming aware that Africa is, and this is sort of tying into the Africa Day thing, and just becoming aware of how diverse and when it's not a monolith, it's not all the same. When I was there, and there was a thing called bongo flavor.
Yeah.
You heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
The first time I went to a beach party, and let me tell you, those beach parties were wild. And I'm down there with my siblings, and we're going away, and the next minute I'm hearing, now what was that? Insane in the Membrane.
Cypress Hill. Yeah.
So I'm hearing Cypress Hill done in Swahili, and it's as good as Cypress Hill. And I'm like, wait, I need to see who these people are. But they had more selection with dancehall, reggae, all the things that were happening, and they had more than what we had here. They were way ahead, way ahead. And I don't think a lot of people actually, like, if you've grown up in New Zealand, you don't have a vested interest in wanting to find out what Africa, and we get all the bullshit, you know, about, oh, what are you doing, Africa? You know, I'm playing with the monkeys and riding your lions and shit. Mm-hmm. It's because they're not seeing, they don't have the vested interest to actually find out that there's a lot more than just these stereotypes. You know what I mean? These stereotype ideals or, you know, I'm just trying to get in here.
And it's interesting, I guess, like, it comes down to that sort of thing where, like, I'm always curious when, like the event we did last weekend, like, what, when we do events like that where it's, like, very clearly, like, all African, all black kind of lineup sort of thing, I'm always really curious to see what that line is of people where it's, like, coming who expect, because it's African DJs or black DJs, that it's going to be Afrobeats involved versus, like, okay, cool, like, I feel like everybody there was, like, whether it was amapiano or house or, like, for me, like, playing garage and that sort of thing, like, it's just differences in genre, right? And I'm always genuinely curious to see if that, like, what that kind of split kind of happens, because I find it, especially with drum and bass as well, like, I feel like drum and bass in New Zealand is such a white music scene.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, in the UK, drum and bass and jungle are, like, really heavily multi-ethnic scenes, sort of thing, and I find that really interesting in that sort of, like, it kind of also feels like there's that stereotype being placed on us, but I also think there's also sometimes there's that almost that kind of feeling of, well, I come from this background, so I don't like these things, or I don't get involved in these spaces.
Yes.
Because I remember, like, my one like that is country. Like, I'm just like, as a black person, I don't really fuck with country.
And
then,
like, I know two of my friends that live somewhere, they fuck with country.
But then I went to
my dad does as well.
Then I went to Jamaica, and it was like, and then there was, like, Jamaicans love country music because someone's like, the kind of the energy, the kind of storytelling, the sort of vibe of it, even or not the rhythm pattern, that's a thing, like, but like the the soul of country is like very similar to the soul of reggae for a lot of people. Yes. That's how they described it. And there was that sort of thing of being like, but then obviously you're in a country that's majority black, so then it doesn't matter. Like, there's no real kind of line of black music. This is what we listen to. And I think that's always a really interesting...
And I think, like, also, like, you know, I'm trying to keep pulling you back to Africa Day because we're on a musical history tour right now. But, you know, with this awareness of Africa Day and Africans, you know, I love the fact that we can talk about being black if we want to. We can say we're African, but in the diaspora we can say we're black too if we want to.
Yeah.
And a lot of people outside of, that have grown up outside, that might be the way they identify, you know, and that's okay. Like... And I also, and just making it, making, just being visible was like a really important thing in the whole thing with Africa Day. I don't know. What do you think, Craig? Because I don't want to go off on a tangent.
And you know, the one thing that's been sitting on my lips right now, a big shout out to him because the set he gave last week.
Yeah, it was good. I was sorry.
I was having tequila dreams.
It was my birthday, so I'm allowed.
I think I failed to get to my tequila for like the first 30 minutes because I'm just listening. I'm just like, what?
How really strong. that was
really
strong
like,
too.
Like he said, was just amazing.
Yeah, it was good.
No, Anansi said is just like, whoa, like I'm still in awe to this day. I told myself I'm going to listen to it. I didn't listen to it during the week because I'm like, I'm going to go and watch him today.
Yeah.
So when I saw him posting, he's on at 10 to 12.
What is your set tonight?
No, don't preempt it, please.
Okay, well, we can tell people.
No,
I'm excited.
He's surprised. He surprised me last week. Please also be surprised today.
Okay, what are you looking forward to for Africa Day weekend? Anything you're looking forward to? Anything you want to happen for African people in New Zealand? What do you want to see?
I truly just want to see my people out. Like, I want everyone to come out, and so then we can actually have that, you know, community again, you know, like bring everyone back together, because every time that I go, everyone does want to talk to one another, you know, and no one's closed off when certain other areas, you know, like people are a little bit more like group off into their own circles. But especially in Africa Day, when I was a kid, you know, I could walk up to so many people, you know, or like my connections know these connections, and then this is how we can.
And connecting, across your age groups and who's who.
Yeah.
It was always, exactly. Like, I noticed that was always exciting for my kids when they met somebody else who had similar heritage.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the same country, you're just out here.
Let me give you something poetic for you.
Yeah.
This is Youth Broadcast Week, and this is the week when you join us. Yeah, like, I think that's...
Are we keeping them?
Yeah, we have to.
Can I keep them?
When you say that, you remind me of that clip I've seen, that the child says, can I pet that dog?
Can I pet that dog? No, we're not going to use those kind of things, guys. He's a graphic designer. Don't ruin it for me, Craig.
You know, I want to introduce you to someone else, South African. And she is one person I think is going to make waves, given enough attention, because she's already done work with Ad Jazz, a lot of artists. And she was recently, I think, in Japan. I'm not sure if she was doing work with some artists as well. Her name is Sio from Joburg.
Yeah.
From, you know about her.
You know about her, right?
Yeah.
Are you an Emma Pian fan?
Like, one of my best mates is South African, so like he's keeping me in like the loop.
So one of the songs that I've been going through lately is No Limit. The limit is spelled LYMYT. I was like, okay.
How long is this track?
Yeah, it's about 4 minutes. But
so we just do a. What have we got here? We got 10 minutes left. Yeah, so we do an outro now.
No.
Out with the song.
Let's play it first, and then I want to see your reaction after that. Okay. And we need to put the gig tonight. So.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is CEO.
Let's go.
This is CEO with No Limit.
Coasters under night skies I don't visit. You call this fun, I call this a fleeting minute. I think you're high on something firing, and I just shots and two drinks. Your recklessness feels just like a dare on your shoulder. Just a mischief in you keeps staring me to come over. I think your eyes are ever open, selling secrets from your lips. I won't dare to take the token, I'll only take it in a kiss.
No Limits by Sio, and if you listen to the last part of it, it actually has that log drum kind of feel.
Just in the end.
Like an Afrobeat type of vibe to it. I'm so stunned by that.
You guys like really soft, gentle music. I'm you know me. I like Bacardi. I like the hard stuff.
Gentle parenting.
Gentle parenting.
We're in the era of gentle parenting. So yeah.
I think that's one of the things that speaking on that kind of used to like that kind of Afrobeat feel at the end of it. I feel like that's what I'm enjoying a lot more is just seeing those crossovers between within African genres, sort of thing. Like, I feel like there's obviously like I feel like DeVito has been someone who's obviously picked up on some of that Ama Piano sort of thing. Yeah. I like seeing those kind of crossovers.
Mm.
And then, like, I feel like I listen to a lot of Afro drill, which is just like, and especially out of like the Congo and like Ghana and stuff like that. Like, their drill scenes are really good because it's like, and I find them a lot more interesting than
the
UK
drillers?
Or American, I'd say so. but I think it's that cool, just like, that's just a different vibe. So I think it's, I like that kind of, that's kind of my kind of, what I like about African music going forward is like just seeing how that collaboration just kind of kicking off.
Mm.
So aphrodisiac, is it?
Yeah,
aphrodisiac tonight. Yeah.
I don't know, it feels like...
Wellington, they've remembered you. There's a celebration for Africa Day, and it's tonight. Go on, tell us. Eddie?
Yeah, so it was me, DJ Colios, and DJ Swagmantic. Should be a good vibe. I think it's $10 entry, kicking off at 10 p.m. I'll be on 10 till 12, so yeah, please come through. It'll be a good vibe. Like,
I can promise you 10 till 12 is going to be something else. And whenever Cole Yours is playing, there was evidence last week.
Yeah.
There was evidence.
Yeah, he's got a fan club.